Straight Talk on WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, Manning Kimmel.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. My name is Manning Kimmel. The program is called Straight Talk. We do it every weekday afternoon, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, TKK, the great county of York, and everything else up and down I-77. And we do it right here on WRHI, South Carolina's seven-time radio station of the year. Our broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to HighSpeedWeb.net for streaming our signal 24/7, 365. State Representative Ray Felder from this House District number 26 is our guest here today on our Straight Talk program. They call her Ms. Education.
Well, thank you.
Well, you've got it all in your lap this year, don't you?
It has been a very, very busy, which started way before session started. But it has been a very exciting time. I don't think there's anyone under that dome that does not agree that now is the time.
Well, yes, I got it. I just wonder whether we're thinking about this more than just in dollars and cents, and are we really looking at everything that's involved with this whole educational issue?
No, we are. For the first time since I've been a part of the General Assembly, this is truly a holistic approach. You know, we're 24th in the country as far as spending for K through 12, but yet our results have us in the high 40s, depending on what you look at. It's not all about spending. I think part of it is about how we spend. I think part of it is the tags we put on spending, mandating that you have to spend it this way. Well, then you have three more people auditing to make sure you spend it that way.
Right.
Whereas, you know, our local districts are most of our local districts are very competent. If we gave them the money, they would spend it correctly for the
sure.
best results.
Yeah. And I think that's probably part of the issue in trying to make people outside of your county, make people who are inside your county understand how big a problem this is outside of your county.
We are in a pocket of excellence, and it's so difficult when you're talking to parents that have not encountered these situations outside. You know, we're sheltered here because we do have some great leadership. We probably have four of the top superintendents in the state. We definitely have some of the best school districts in the state. But outside of York County, that picture's not always the same. I mean, right down the road in Fairfield County, they probably spend more per student than most any other district in the state, yet they have some of the poorest results. So it is a holistic approach to looking at this and trying to make some improvements and trying to give our teachers back. You know, we've asked teachers in our state to do everything. They're now trying to be parents, social workers, school resource officers. It's just way too much. So I do think that we've taken the time to really listen to the teachers, to listen to what works in York County may not work in Hampton County. Mm. And sitting in Columbia, dictating and mandating what happens across the state is probably not the most efficient. I spent some time with the new state superintendent in Mississippi, who has only been in that position for about 7 years. And the one thing that resonated throughout that whole conversation is poverty is not an excuse.
Boy, I like that reasoning. I really like that reasoning. So let's take this piece by piece. As they say, you know, how do you take down an elephant? One bite at a time, right? All right, so you are a subcommittee. Tell me the subcommittee chairmanship that you have.
K through 12. Yeah, under Education and Public Works, which Chair Lady Rita Allison chairs, and then I chair the subcommittee, which is K-12, that has had the omnibus education bill. And that's where we have focused our time and energy, is looking at that, listening to teachers, listening to the parents, trying to get a good feel as to, if we can't do everything, what's the most urgent?
Okay.
And just like we were discussing earlier with your project, part of the urgency in our state we have is we really have no one looking at birth to age 20. We have no one collectively saying, what happens to this parent that has a child with maybe special needs, or a child with a learning disability or a reading disorder? Where is their one-stop shop to get what they need for that child? We don't have that.
No.
And it's imperative that we somehow get a group of people at the table that have no turf to protect. None of them are after protecting their jobs or their career, but they're really looking at what happens when that child is born. What are we doing to have them prepared to go to kindergarten?
My. All right, let's take the first bite out of this apple.
Okay.
Which has to do with an issue that I think is affecting most states across the country, and that is just compensation, pure compensation. I don't know how many times we've talked about this on this program. The thing that really concerns me is we have done so well economically in this state, tracking all these major industries, BMW, Volvo, Mercedes, you name it. So we've attracted all these companies. They want a really high-trained, high-caliber, smart workforce to do the work that they need to have done. And yet, I have said time and time again, if we were lucky enough to get another BMW in this state, could we provide the workforce? I don't know whether we could. Part of it is teacher salaries. So we've seen the walkouts that have occurred across the country. We haven't had anything here, but we certainly have heard all the rumblings. You all are talking about, what, a $10,000, a $5,000 pay increase for entry-level teachers?
Yes, we're going to take entry-level up to $35,000, and then I think Ways and Means, which handles the budget. I don't handle the budget for K-12. I handle the legislation and the policy. But Ways and Means, we're looking at an average, I think, is going to be about a 5-6% raise for our teachers.
That would be for those who are already there on board. All right.
Correct.
So I'll ask the tough question. Is that enough?
No. I mean, my personal opinion,
How are you going to compete with the private sector?
Right. We've got to get to the Southeast average, and then we've got to have a long-range plan where for the next several years' state budgets, we continue to give an increase in teacher salary and a reduction in teacher expectations outside of that classroom.
Okay, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. I want to stick on the salary here.
Okay.
So in a perfect world, you would want a formula that over a period of time is going to get people beyond the Southeastern average.
Correct.
To maybe being the best in the Southeast and possibly bumping up against what it would be in the private sector for some type of equivalent job.
Correct.
Is that reasonable?
Yes, okay. I do believe that's reasonable. I don't think that's reasonable in one budget year.
Gotcha. But it can't be 10 budget years. I mean, it's got to be something that happens
That happens in the next 3 to 5 years,
okay,
that we surpass the Southeastern average. And I think it also, in looking at that, is also the amount of responsibility that our teachers have.
Well, let's get to that, because I know one of the things that drives teachers nuts is all these tests that have to be taken. And the last time I heard anything, you all have recommended abolishing, what is it, 4 out of 6 of the tests or something like that?
We're recommending that the state only mandate the test that ESSA requires, the Every Student Succeeds Act, the federal government. They mandate tests, so we are going to have to continue to do those tests. That's required. And a lot of the local districts then put their own test on top of that, assessment test. And then we have principals that add additional tests that they want as somewhat of an accountability. Is that first grade class growing, or is that third grade class growing?
Well, that's all part and parcel of the system that you've put in place statewide to reward schools that have done well and teachers who have done well. I mean, it's called competition.
Exactly. And you don't know how your children are doing unless you have some type of assessment. You don't know strengths and weaknesses. So I think it's smarter for us in Columbia not to mandate that, to let our districts take control of what testing they need. Let our principals take control of what testing they need. They're closest to the parents. But I think we are going to have to look at some, for lack of a better word, some public relations that we know who's requiring this test that little Johnny has to take tomorrow.
All right, so if your recommendation goes through, they'll be required only to do this federal test, the ESSA test, and then it'll be up to the local districts what they want to put on top of that.
Well, that is not in this piece of legislation.
It's not. Okay.
This piece of legislation takes the state mandated test down to only what the federal government requires.
Okay, so the state was requiring how many different tests?
The state, we were up to 7.
Oh my God.
So we're much better, making progress there, so that our students and our teachers won't have such testing fatigue.
Okay.
Now, the one thing that we are trying to look at, and you know, Manning, I was very much involved with the third grade reading and trying to make our students are prepared. One thing we've got to do is we've got to start earlier. We cannot let a child get to the third grade so severely behind in reading that it is unpractical. I mean, it's unrealistic to think any teacher, the best of the best teachers, cannot get them reading on grade level in such a short period of time. So we've got to start earlier with that, working toward that. You know, we have about 64,000 third graders. Of that, we only held back 300 and something because they could not read on a third grade level. We all know that there are a lot more children out there that need that extra help. And I think we as a state, it is our responsibility to try and get that help that they need housed, grouped, oversaw by one group, one body that can say this needed to start at age 3, this needed to start at age 4.
This is the same initiative that Mayor Geddes is working on here in the city of Rock Hill, is to get kids to a third grade reading level, because if you're ever going to break kids out of the poverty cycle,
right,
they have got to be, but you know, I mean, short of going in and becoming the parent for these children, how are you going to do this? I mean, how do you get parents who probably, in my opinion, it's not you saying this, have no reason bringing kids into the world if they're not going to take care of them? How do you get them to understand you've got to read a book to Susie or Johnny at night? You've got to turn that idiot box off, and you got to get them involved in
that's right.
If they can't read, you read to them.
But it takes a village to raise a child.
I got all that.
Not one teacher.
I got
not
that.
Not one school. We've all got to get in there.
But
business
how,
community.
How do we do that? That's what I
want
to know.
And I think you're right, and I don't have a silver answer. But I do, you know, the old Chinese proverb, two good parents is worth more than 100 great teachers. I believe that. I really do. But I also realistically realize that I've got a lot of single parent households. I've got a lot of children that don't actually have parents that are caring for them and helping to shape their future. So I think we have to take a look at this to say, how do we help that parent best? And when do we start? You know, you can't work with a child from 0 to age 3 under the BabyNet program, and then they're done at age 3. BabyNet no longer applies. What happens between 3 and 5?
It's just the whole thing's a mystery to me. And I know I'm a Cro-Magnon man. I come from another planet. I just don't understand how you bring children into the world and then just kind of drop them off into the world. I mean,
understand, though, these parents have never been taught to parent. They didn't have it as a child. They don't realize that it needs to be any different.
So with that being said, and I would agree with you 100%, how do you get them to understand you need to read to this child?
Correct. Because it has to be the family approach. It can't just be the burden and responsibility of that teacher.
That's right.
It has
That's
to
true.
Be. It can't. It has to be a community effort. Personally, I think we've got to go into these rural communities. The only buildings in these rural communities that are usable buildings are your churches and your schools. We need to use those 12 months a year. We need to have these children someplace to go that's a learning environment, that's a nurtured environment, and keep these children engaged and keep them active. You know, we've had, you know, our First Steps program in the state for many years now. And that, of course, is a private government partnership in so many of our communities. And we have a great one here in York County. Does a wonderful job. But there's a lot of improvement out there that could be made. And I think our religious organizations, they want to help. They want to be a part of this solution. But I think we need someone bringing all those people together and having that conversation at the table. And that's why I'm excited about moving this legislation forward and actually having someone there that's meeting regularly and talking about, is this working? If it's working in Allendale, maybe it can work in Timmonsville. If it works in Allendale and Timmonsville, then why don't we try it in Hampton?
So you're saying that the proposed legislation has something like that in there?
It has a new committee that would be the 0 to 20 committee, which is very similar to a committee that North Carolina adopted several years ago. And that 0 to 20 committee will not be populated with State Department or Education Oversight Committee Department or other entities. This will be a group highly effective teachers sitting at the table talking about, this works, this is what we need. You give me a child that's kindergarten ready and I will have them first grade ready. But if you give me a child that is not kindergarten ready, we need a roadmap that we can get that child ready.
So is this a place where brainstorming is going to occur?
Yes.
And then who's going to implement the good ideas?
Well, I think a lot of that's going to come back to the State Department of Education to implement these ideas. I think some of it will come back to the legislature to make changes, to make corrections. You know, why are we requiring all this paperwork of teachers? Are we using it for anything? Does it have a purpose? If it doesn't, then we need to take it out of the lunchbox.
And
we don't need it.
There's some people who would say, why do we need a State Department of Education? What are they doing?
I agree.
And look at the money that's being spent there. That's heresy, I'm sure.
Well, but I think that is a part of I've tried to approach this as a three-legged stool. We need this legislation to fix some problems. We need the funding formula revisited. That's the second leg.
Oh, yeah.
The funding formula is broken and has been for years. But the third leg of that stool is we need someone looking after the best interest of our children that do not have parents that are either willing to or have the skills necessary to say what's best for this child from 0 to 20. All of our kids are not going to college, but they need to be able to be career ready.
I like what your friend from Mississippi said. Poverty is no longer an excuse.
It's not an excuse. No. And we've got to quit blaming it on poverty. The State Department took over a small school district in Florence, Timmonsville. And they have made great strides. Betsy DeVos just came down and toured that school, making great improvements. We need to duplicate that on a much faster scale for these schools that need that additional help. I have to give kudos to State Superintendent Molly Spearman. The Office of Transformation within the State Department, Dr. LaToya Dixon heads that up. She is fabulous to listen to. I am amazed that they've been able to make the amount of progress they have in the time limit. The problem is we're way too late getting this train started.
We got to take our, speaking of late, our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill. And, of course, we hang out here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week. And there's only one way to do it. And what is it, everybody?
Slice, slice, slice.
Not bad, not bad. Back after these words.
This is Straight Talk.
Hey, Charlie, what's new with Substation 2?
That's easy. We're bringing back our delicious corned beef sandwich. It's lean, perfectly seasoned, sliced fresh to order, and gardened just the way you like.
Don't miss this limited time offer at Substation 2.
Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Gumborio Medical Alert.
It was important that my siblings and I recognized that Dad wanted to be independent, but we also wanted to be able to make sure that he was okay. So we started researching medical alert systems. Then we found this system. It's a little button that he can wear around his neck as a pendant or on his belt. He speaks directly into it, just like he's talking on a cordless phone.
But my kids and grandkids are the most important thing in the world to me. I don't like to ask for help, but it is nice to know that if I ever need it, it's just a touch of a button away.
For complete details, go online to CompordiumAlert.com.
Did you spend too much money during the holidays? Save money by consolidating those high-interest credit cards into one easy payment with a Founders credit card. Founders has low balance transfer rates and no transfer fees. Visit FoundersFCU.com for more information and to apply for your Founders credit card today. Not a Founders member? Visit Relax, join Founders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Relax with Founders credit cards. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Good Pharmacy, with a modern look and traditional standards.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. All six of our pharmacists love serving you and your children. Ask us about alternatives for your child's medicine.
My mommy loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
Hungry but can't get out? DoorDash now delivers Substation 2 subs and salads 7 days a week. Just go online to MySubstationII.com and click on the DoorDash delivery tab and your order will be on its way. That's MySubstationII.com. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
What if I could tell you when a wildfire was going to happen? Of course, I can't. But shouldn't you be ready anyway? Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. The Education Lady, State Representative Ray Felder from District Number 26, is here with us today. You want to talk any more education? You want to talk about something else?
Well, we are definitely working hard on it. And I would like to just give a shout out to the teachers. The caliber of conversation, whether they've called me, whether they've emailed me, whether they've sent me letters, has been so professional from our teachers throughout the state. And I appreciate that. You know, we're all looking for solutions. We're looking for suggestions. And we've been very fortunate that they've shared some really great ones with us.
Well, I am with you. I think South Carolina is way behind where we need to be on this whole education, public education issue. And we're not even talking about higher ed. We're just talking about K-12 right now. And I just, what I don't understand is how focused we have been as a state on economic development and what a great job we've done. And at the same time, we've just said, we're talking, we need a workforce that's ready to go, and hell, they ain't ready to go.
Well, we're very thankful. Speaker Lucas has taken this on to say, we're not going anywhere else until we get this right. And he's right. We have to take the time to make this happen.
Well, and so, you know,
Speaker Lucas has really been at the forefront of this education, and I don't think I've ever been involved with a piece of legislation this size since I've been serving, but I also don't think we've ever spent so much time listening to the experts, and sometimes that's what we have to do. So that has been very eye-opening, and I'm sure it will be a very, at the end of the day, we're never going to get everything we want.
That's right.
But at least everyone now seems to be trying to push that wheelbarrow in the right direction, and I'm thankful for that.
Now, I know where you could pick up an extra 60-plus million dollars. Would you be interested in that?
Of course, okay. Always. $60 million if the person that won the lottery comes forward.
Well, that's right. I'm just going to tell you, if you get in that purse of yours, which is rather large, and pull out that winning lottery ticket,
that would be great.
The state of South Carolina would have 60-some million dollars. You would have $1.5 billion, and you wouldn't know what to do with all that money.
Yeah.
So you could give $1 billion back to solving this issue.
This is correct. And we need that type of philanthropy. You're right, because, you know, if you get a group of people together that all have a common interest, you can make something happen.
Very true. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope something. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I shudder to get into anything else, but I got to touch on this one because it comes up every year. Where are we, as you see it, in terms of legalization of marijuana in the state of South Carolina? We already have, whatever, the 6 or 8 states across the nation that are doing this. I don't understand it, but they're doing it. Maybe it's just in the name of tax revenue. But if you look at some of the social ills that are happening in states like Colorado, I mean, it makes no sense to me. No sense at all.
And I'll have to admit, it's one of the things that scares me. You know, I was here when video poker took over York County. In a very negative way, we saw how all of a sudden we had so many more, not only law enforcement issues, but we had a lot of social families falling apart because of video poker. I think we have got to be extremely careful and do a lot more due diligence that's been done thus far.
Do you sense that there is a tide pushing this that's going to happen?
There's definitely a tide pushing this. But I think just as much as we have the law enforcement that is still very much opposed to this, under the current situation that we're under, I personally wish the FDA, the federal drug, would take a stand on this and do their part for this. But state by state, every state being different, rules being different amongst states, that is a very slippery slope.
Well, I got it when it comes to trying to come up with solutions for people who have real, true, permanent pain. I got that.
Yes.
And I think they're working on some of that with these oils and what have you. But just to let everybody go out and smoke a joint, I mean, come on. Really? That's where we want to be?
Well, it's not just so much the smokable part. But you've also got to realize it opens up the edible part.
Oh, I got you.
It opens up when your kid goes to school and, you know, it just looks like regular chocolate chip cookies.
Yep, that's
I
right.
mean, there's a lot more. And for those of us that have never really delved into it to know much about it, listening to this testimony is absolutely eye-opening.
And with that, we're going to say thank you for being here. Thank you, Ray, for all that you're doing down there. And good luck to you on the education bill. Whew. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2. Sherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors, online at AndersonGriggs.com. And, of course, the one and only place ever to stop by for lunch is right here where we hang out. Substation 2, Sherry Road across from Winthrop, where we prepare fresh subs and salads right before your eyes. And why does everybody come here? Because we only do it one way, and that is
slice, slice, slice.
All right, see you tomorrow on the radio. Bye.